I came across some interesting data the other day. You see, I was looking through this report. The Bank Credit Suisse does this wealth report, a global wealth report every year. And they had this report for the most recent year's worth of data. And one of the big things that they always report on is the median global wealth in the world. So what is the average wealth per adult worldwide? Well, in 2020, it was around $77,000 per adult. So that means the average median adult across billions of people in the world was about $77,000. Now, of course, that number is skewed upward a lot, right? Because of the ultra wealthy. If you look at the mean number versus the median number, that's going to skew those results a lot. Now, if you look at the median net worth of American families, that number is about $52,700. And that's based on data I dug up from the Survey of Consumer Finance, which tracks those kinds of numbers. So $52,700, whether you look at that number or $77,000, that's a lot of money by many people's standards. But that being said, why do some people have $1 million in net worth? How are some people able to get to 10 million or 100 million or even a billion? How is it possible that some people are able to deviate so far above these median numbers to obtain wealth that's, say, $1 million or 10 million or 100 million dollars, or even some people are billionaires? How in the world is that actually possible when the median numbers worldwide and in the US, they're so much lower? Well, today we're going to talk about that on Stock Stories. All right. Welcome. Welcome to the show. You are listening to the Stock Stories podcast. My name is Alex Mason. I am your host and stock storyteller. Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to the show and coming with me on this journey as we decode the business behind the stock. That is what we do here on Stock Stories. We also talk about mental models and learn about other investing principles to help you become a better investor. That's ultimately why I'm here, is to help you, the individual investor, make better decisions, better investing decisions. So thanks for joining me today. I appreciate you taking the time to listen. Now, as I mentioned at the very beginning, how do we reconcile this difference in numbers between people who have more or less average net worths with people who have financial wealth? I mean, that's a big disparity, right? What is the actual difference? What is the principle that separates the wealthy from those who are not wealthy? Now, normally on the show, we would talk about a company-specific episode and do some analysis through a case study, or we would talk about a principle of a mental model. But today's episode is different. We're going to continue the Investing 101 series that we started a few weeks ago. If you recall, we talked about the three things that you can do with money. That was Investing 101 part one. And this is going to be part two in that series. And it's called The Eighth Wonder of the World. So let's just get into it, shall we? Let's talk about the eighth wonder of the world. In the ancient world, there were a few great monuments that were considered to be the greatest structures that ever were created. And these included things like the Hanging Gardens of Babylon or the Lighthouse at Alexandria, and there were many others. And these were huge man-made structures that invoked a sense of awe and wonder in the people who were around to behold them. And the only surviving one of these structures is actually the Great Pyramid at Giza, which is in Egypt. Now, the concept of compound interests, this is what legendary scientist Albert Einstein called the eighth wonder of the world. He believed that because of its mathematical power, it was right up there in influence with the great monuments of the ancient world. Now, in fact, he's often quoted as saying, quote, "Compound interest is the eighth wonder of the world. He who understands it earns it. He who doesn't pays it," end quote. So what I want to do now is help us understand why this force can be so powerful in our lives. Now, the concept of interests, it's been around as long as the original seven wonders have. There are actually records of clay tablets recording the annual growth rate of loans. So, for example, Roman Emperor Cicero once remarked in writing to a friend that he would never charge someone more than 12% annual interest. And we actually have the records of that. So this idea of money being paid to borrow money, this has been around for a long time. Now let's break this down. So what is compound interest? Now this is a fundamental concept, and if you listen to the show for a while, then you obviously understand it. But there are many new investors who listen to the show, and that's really kind of why I'm doing this series, is I want to kind of go back to basics and help reinforce kind of why we even care about this whole stock market thing in the first place. And the main reason is that it's one of the best ways to compound money. And what does compounding mean? Well, compounding is when money grows into more money. It's one of the principles around which the entire financial system exists. So let's explain this with an example. Let's say I lend you $100 and then you agree to pay me back 10% interest after a year, right? Plus the original $100 that you owe me. So this would mean that you would pay me back $110 and I'd have made a profit of $10. This is the concept of simple interest. Right? There's a certain amount of money, which is called the principal, and then I make some money on that money, which is called interest. But let's say that you need some more money and you want me to lend you more than just the $100. So I lend you the $110 that I just got, and then I charge the same 10%. After another year, you would owe me $11 in interest, which makes the total $121. Now, notice that the amount of interest went up by $1 after another year. It went from $10 to $11, right? This is the power of compound interest. Money earns some money, and then that money earns even more. So when you pay interest to someone, what you're doing is you're renting their money. When you collect interest, it is because you're renting out your money to someone else. This is a good way to think about it, because if you imagine renting an apartment or renting a house from somebody, you're getting shelter, and in exchange, you're paying them for that. You're paying them with money for the use of that space. Well, it's the same thing with money. If a bank lets someone borrow money to start a business or buy a car or a home, they are letting someone literally borrow that money, but with interest attached to it. And that's how the banks make a profit, fundamentally. So this general concept is really important, because this is how money grows. Now I want to talk about the time value of money. So remember in part one of this series where I mentioned that time is our most precious resource? Well, time and money, they have this interesting relationship with each other. If you were to lend me money for a year, how much interest would you charge me? I mean, I don't know, maybe you charge me 5%, maybe 10%. What about if we agreed to a loan term of a much longer period of time? Let's say that it was 10 years. How much interest would you charge me then? Surely it would be more, right? It might be 15 or 20%. But what's the reason? It's because by taking longer to pay the loan back, you have to wait and you can't spend that money yourself. So in order to compensate you for the time that I am taking to pay it back, you might demand a higher interest rate. So this is the concept of the time value of money. So I'll repeat that again. It's the concept of the time value of money, because in order to compensate you for the time I'm taking to pay it back, you would demand a higher rate of interest, right? Because it's that basic concept of utility. Remember, we did that episode a few weeks ago about the mental model of utility. You literally don't have utility of that money anymore until I pay it back to you. So there has to be some kind of exchange of value to make it worth it for you. So in order to incentivize you to lend me money for a longer period of time, you might charge me more interest. So that's the basic concept of the time value of money. Now, this brings us to compounding and the different components that drive it. And this is incredibly important. Now, I don't care how advanced of an investor you are or how much of a novice you are. This is such a powerful concept to always come back to, because everything is driven by this. So listen carefully. You want to build wealth. You want financial freedom. This is the fundamental principle of how you do it. It's the most important concept to understand. And everything relies on the principle of compound returns. So when it comes to compounding money, there are three things that matter. Three things, okay? First, there's the amount that's invested. Then there's the time that it's invested. And then third, there's the rate of return on the investment. I'll repeat that real quick. The amount invested, the time that it's invested, and then the rate of return. So let's go through each of these and talk about why it matters. So first of all is the amount. The more money you put aside to invest, the more you will have in the long run. One of my best investments percentage-wise, it doubled within a year, and I was incredibly thrilled. But I kind of had to laugh at myself, because it hasn't actually made me much money in absolute dollars, because I didn't put that much money into the investment. I didn't have a lot to invest at the time, but I still saw the opportunity in this particular stock, and I wanted to take advantage of it with what I had, but I didn't actually make that much money from it in absolute dollars, even though it doubled within a year. So contrast that example with some other investments that I've made that have grown more modestly, but they've resulted in a greater increase in my family's net worth. And the reason that is because I was more committed to the investment by putting more money into it in the first place, way more money. And the thing is, every dollar counts, but more dollars invested, it makes more of a difference. Now, this makes intuitive sense, right? If you invest $100, you're going to get a different result than if you invest $1,000. If we look at a quick example, let's say that you invest $100 for a 10-year period, and you just let it sit there and it grows at a certain rate of return. Let's say that it grows at 10%. You would have around $259 at the end of 10 years. Well, if you invested 10 times more, if you invested $1,000, how much would you have? Well, you would have 10 times more money. You would have $2,593 instead of the $259. So the amount that you invest scales proportionally with the results. So if you put in 10 times more money, you get 10 times the results. So that is the amount. Let's talk now about time. Time is another factor in compounding. And let me tell you, this is a huge one. Now, when money grows, it starts doing so very slowly. It feels like it's moving up linearly, but it's not. It's actually growing exponentially. And this is where the magic comes in. If you invest $100 and wait 1 year, now assuming you earn 10% annually on your investment, you'll have $110. If you wait 5 years, you'd have $177. If you wait 10 years, you'll have $259. But hey, what if you waited 50 years? That's a long time, right? 50 years, that's half a century. If you invested $100 over a 50-year period, at the end of the period, you would have, without putting in a penny more, you would have $11,739. Wow, that's a big difference, right? Now, to put this in perspective, $11,739, that's over 45 times as much money as if you had waited only 10 years. But you only waited five times as longer. So you see the difference here with the proportions. You waited five times longer as far as time, but you got 45 times as much money. And that's because of the exponential power of compounding. Because of how time influences compounding, you get disproportionately more what you put in. Remember, we were talking about another mental model, power laws? Yeah, you get disproportionately more results with an incremental amount of effort. You see how these mental models tie in? This is how compounding works. So one aspect we need to consider when it comes to time, though, is we don't have any control over it. You can't control time. I can't control time. It just happens. The only thing that we can do related to time is just making sure that we stay invested and we don't cash out our investment prematurely. This is what harms people's wealth so often, unfortunately, is they start building a little bit of wealth in their account, but then they say, oh, well, I need this money for this, or I want to spend it now. And then they interrupt the compounding process. They take the money out prematurely. They withdraw from their 401ks. They take money out of their investment accounts to do this or that. And then maybe they put it back later, maybe they don't, but they just interrupt the compounding process. And time is such a key factor that if you don't stay invested, you run the risk of not reaping the benefits of compounding. So let it do its work. Compounding needs time to do its work in order for you to see how powerful it is. Now let's talk about the third component. And this is a big one. This is probably the one that most people naturally think of, right? It's rate of return. The third and final factor that influences how much money compounds is rate of return. Now, the rate of return on an investment, it's influenced by a lot of factors. And we'll discuss what those are in another part of this series. But for now, just know that the higher the rate of return, the faster money compounds. Right? A 1% or 2% annualized rate of growth in our investments, that's not going to do that much for us, especially considering that prices of goods and services go up, usually around 3 or 4% per year. And this is the phenomenon known as inflation, right? Gas gets more expensive, food gets more expensive, healthcare, school, shelter, all of these things that we buy in our daily lives, over time, they tend to get more expensive. So if we only earn 1% or 2% on our money, we're not going to be able to keep up with those price increases, and we're not actually building real wealth, which is an increase in purchasing power. Now, let's say that you get a rate of return on your investments of somewhere in the neighborhood of 5% or 6%. Now we're doing a little better. So in this range, you're modestly growing your actual purchasing power over time. So years from now, you'll be able to buy more goods and services than you can today, even adjusting for those price increases. Now, what if you improve the rate of return even more? What if you get north of 10% on your money? Now, once you get to this level, that's when you can create real wealth over time. So in fact, 10%, that's the historical average rate of return that the stock market has given over the past century or so. I'd have to look at the exact data, but 10% is a pretty good number as far as looking at stock market averages. Now, many individual stocks perform worse than this, but also many perform much better as well, with some stock investments that return 15%, 20%, or even 30% annually to their investors. Now, those are the stocks that you and I, that's what we're looking for as individual investors. And that's why we study all of these case studies of companies, because we want to find what those companies are so that we can buy them ourselves. So above this number, above these numbers of around 20% or so per year, it is possible to earn higher rates of return on your money. So let me be careful about how I talk about this, because this can get really tricky, but it is possible to earn things like 50%, 800%, or 1,000% returns on your money. It is possible. This is what happens, though, when you start a business and you grow it over time successfully. This is the realm of the entrepreneur. So theoretically, there's no limit to the growth that you can have here. Now, some people would say that these kinds of returns are crazy. Yeah, you can never expect those returns. Well, yeah, that may be true, but that's only true if you never plan on running a business yourself or learning an advanced investing skill set. But that's beside the point. What we're interested in here is how well we can do purely from the perspective of an investor. So this means that we don't have to actually run the business ourselves, but we can pay someone else to run it for us. Either we own a business privately or in the form of stock ownership. So our wealth grows not because we exchange our time for it, but because we exchange our money for it. So the act of being an investor is to purchase more money in the future. And that's the principle of compounding. When we want to get wealthier, we buy more money. So here's how it works as far as rate of return. Here's an example. If we invested $100 at 1% rate of return, and let's assume that we hold the investment for 10 years, we would have $110 at the end of the 10-year period. Now, if you earn a 10% rate of return on that $100, you would have $259 at the end of that. But what about a 15% rate of return? This boosts the number up to over $400. So you can see how the higher the rate of return, you have a disproportional impact on the end amount of wealth that you have, which makes sense, right? So that is the last principle of compounding. You have these three principles. You've got the amount invested, you've got the time invested, and you have the rate of return on the investment. I think a lot of times we just like to skip forward to thinking about rate of return because we think that that's like super important, and it is super important. Obviously, if we can pick stocks that are compounding very quickly, then we're going to make a lot more than if we pick stocks that don't. So that's intuitively obvious, right? But we can't forget about the other aspects of this equation. The time that we stay invested matters a lot. And also the amount of money that we have invested matters a lot. And I've seen this play out in my own life. Over the past several years as an investor, especially in the beginning, the investments that I was picking were not that great. I mean, maybe they're okay in some cases, but some investments actually lost money. But overall, the investments that my wife and I have selected did all right. I mean, they did decently. They weren't incredible investments, but they weren't that bad either. So the rate of return was more or less average. But what we still managed to grow our wealth from a very small base because, one, we've been investing for a while now. It's been several years that we've been investors. And then number two is we've always made sure to dedicate a certain amount of our income to putting money into investments. And that has helped tremendously. I cannot tell you how incredible it is that just by putting aside a certain amount of money and leaving it for a certain period of time, how impactful that can be. So I want to highly encourage you to do that. Even if you aren't sure about exactly what to invest in, you're going through the archives of this show and listening to different episodes about different companies, that's all awesome. But make sure you take some action and actually start putting money into investments, because those other components matter a lot too. So even if you do get it wrong on the specific stock aspect of it, it'll still matter because you're being invested and you're harnessing that eighth wonder of the world, which is compounding, and you're able to actually grow wealth. So this is the formula, basically, right? Like, how do people become billionaires? Well, they start businesses that compound at super high growth rates. And then either they sell the business or they take it public, or maybe they never do either of those things, but the business grows so fast that they hold it privately and then they just take a cut of the profits. That's how people become billionaires, right? How do people become millionaires or multimillionaires? Well, you don't necessarily need to start a business to reach those levels of wealth. You can become a mom and pop investor and just put money into either an index fund or a selection of individual stocks that you've researched and carefully curated. And then over a period of maybe 10, 20, 30 years, yeah, you can reach $1 million or more for sure. I mean, we've done the math on this show in the past and it's very possible. So that's the difference there is compounding. It's just that people who reach, say, $100 million or $1 billion of net worth, they are really honing in on the time aspect and really honing in on the rate of return aspects typically, because a lot of people don't start out with millions of dollars to invest. So the amount invested isn't usually as much of a factor. But if you can start a company from nothing and grow it immensely, then that's basically rate of return at work right there, right? But you and I, we don't necessarily have to do that in order to become wealthy. We can harness the other two variables. And along the way, we can learn how to invest in individual stocks, individual companies, and improve our rate of return by learning the skills of an investor, which is what we focus on this show. So those are the three components of compounding. And yeah, that's the eighth wonder of the world. So I hope you've enjoyed this episode. And I want to note too that there are many ways to achieve the same goal. So I want to run an example for you here. Let's say you want to build a portfolio of $1 million. So if you had no debt, this would make you a millionaire. And by many people's standard of living, this would make you financially free, or at least close to it, right? So $1 million. Let's say we want to make a plan for you to be a millionaire. Now, here's a few examples of how you can achieve this goal. Now that we know what these three variables are and how they impact the equation, how would you get to $1 million? Well, here's one example. Example one is you invest $100 per month at a rate of 15% annually for 33 years. So you see the amount of money invested, $100 per month, the rate of return is 15%, and the time invested would be 33 years in order to get to that $1 million number. Now, 15% annually, that's maybe a little sporty for the average investor. It would be hard to get that, but for a skilled investor, I do believe that 15% annual returns are possible. So if you learn the skills of an investor, you don't actually have to invest that much. You can get $100 per month into your investments. Well, after 33 years, you would hit $1 million. Now, what about, let's say you were willing to wait longer and just invest a little bit more, right? So here's example two. Let's say you invest $500 per month, but your rate of return is only 5% annually. Well, how long would it take you to hit $1 million? It would take you 45 years. So yeah, that is a long period of time, but you don't actually need your investments to do that well. I mean, 5% rate of return is pretty achievable. That's pretty conservative. And so your main job in this scenario would be to make sure that you're consistently investing that $500 each month. And then time is going to do the heavy lifting, right? To get you to $1 million. So that's another way to approach it. And then another example, I just went ahead and did a third one for you. Let's say that you invested $1,000 per month. Let's say you're really committed to investing $1,000 each and every month, no matter what. Well, let's say you got average stock market returns of 10% annually. So you invested $1,000 per month at a rate of return of 10% annually. Well, how long would it take you to get to $1 million? In this scenario, it would only take you 23 years, which, yeah, that's still a long time, but that's not an incredibly long period of time like the other examples. If you started this at 21 years old, well, 23 years after 21 is 44. So by the time you're in your mid-40s, if you started early enough, you would have $1 million. Like, that's incredible, right? So that just goes to show you that if you increase the amount of money significantly and you can play with the other variables as far as rate of return, you can change the time required to hit a certain number quite significantly. It just depends on your personal situation, your circumstances, and your goals, and how ambitious you want to be. If you're okay waiting a long time to become wealthy, then you really don't have to invest that much. You just have to make sure you do it consistently. If you have more aggressive goals and you want a higher level of wealth in a shorter period of time, well, you don't have as much time working for you, so you really have to tweak those other two variables. You really have to focus on rate of return, and you really have to focus on the amount that you're investing, which ultimately comes down to how high you're able to increase your income and your savings rate, right? The more money that you make, the higher percentage of the money that you put away for investments, and then the higher return you're able to get on those investments, that's what's going to build wealth for you very quickly and really accelerate the process. So it all depends on how you want to do it, right? You are the author of your life story. You are the investor here. You get to choose. That's the awesome part of this. You get to decide, do I want to focus more on rate of return? Do I want to focus more on time? Do I want to focus more on the amount invested? Which of the variables do I want to focus on? Now, I will say that if you pick two out of three of these variables and really focus on them, you're probably going to do well. You're probably going to do well if you focus on, say, just rate of return and time, or you focus on just amount of invested and time, you're probably going to do all right. But the magic really happens when you tweak each of these variables and do the most that you can with each of these variables so that they're all working in harmony. If you put in a lot of money at a high rate of return over a long period of time, that's naturally going to build the most wealth. But that being said, it's a personal decision about how you approach this. So think about it in your situation. What's the best way to get compounding working for me? Which of these variables do I care most about, and do I have the most control over? So that is what I want to leave you with there. Now, amount and time are the two factors of compounding that are most easily understood, but the rate of return aspect, obviously, it's easy for me to say, yeah, 10%, 15% annually is going to be way better than 5% annually. Of course, it's easy for me to say that. But how do we find investments that return 15% or 20%? Well, we'll talk about that in part three of this series, where we talk more specifically about buying assets. But we'll leave that episode for another day. Thanks for listening to Stock Stories. We'll see you next week. The information presented here on Stock Stories is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. You and you alone are responsible for your investment and financial decisions. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, or financial advisor that can analyze your specific situation in the context of your goals and circumstances.